This podcast replay is brought to you by Vape and Smoke Shop in West Pines. Mention the Big O Show. Get 10 to 20% off the entire store. Call them 954-613-3367 or visit on social media at VSS West Pines.
All righty. We promised you Andy Benoit is going to join us. And, of course, you can follow him on Twitter like I and so many others do at Andy_Benoit. Excellent NFL insider. Knows his draft inside and out. So we're going to have a little fun with him now. And, Andy, the good thing about being quarantined is you kind of normally are quarantined anyways, right? You're always locked up somewhere watching film anyway.
That's correct. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm actually watching a Dolphins play from last year just by coincidence. So I'm hopefully I'm fresh and loose to have a conversation here.
I love it. I love it. I'm glad you are Dolphins in tune. And just out of curiosity, Andy, because I've been ripping the Dolphins for 20 years. So people now are freaking out that over the last calendar year, I have been like the most positive dude on the planet because I've loved the way they've approached everything. I think they've really approaching it with a football sense on how to really rebuild this entire thing. So you tell me, since Chris Greer took over last year and added McKenzie and added Marvin Allen and cleared out the cap and got rid of all the salaries and loaded up all the draft picks and now free agency and going 5-4 at the end of the year and beating the Patriots in a game that they needed, everything that you've seen in the last year, how do you grade what Chris Greer has done?
Well, if we're talking about a guy setting a plan, and we can debate whether we like the plan or not, but look, he's got his plan. You have to have one. That's his. As far as adhering to the plan, I think you give him an A, maybe even an A+, because it's what you just outlined. I never once thought they were tanking per se. We used to call what they did rebuilding. Now this word tanking's come along and it's kind of a hot button word. But the point was they went all in on the plan that they had. And they got better over the course of the season after executing that plan. I thought Brian Flores, and nobody would ever do this, and it's probably an exaggeration, but it's worth saying because he took so much crap from people about their approach last year. I mean, he deserved Coach of the Year consideration for the way they finished and how competitive they were in the second half of that season playing with what they had. And now they've gone out and they've rebuilt, and I like what they're doing this offseason. They'll probably need one more year of this kind of approach to really get to where they want to be. But I think they're on a tremendous path.
All right, I like it. I like it. All right, so at number five, you start looking at all these. You're doing your own mock. You're looking at what you think these GMs are going to do. What's the realistic pick in Andy Benoit's eyes at number five for the Miami Dolphins?
Well, I'm not a draft guy in the sense that I haven't studied these prospects yet. So let's talk the team need and then the concept and see if what player kind of emerges there. What's really interesting to me about Miami is that they follow the Patriots model, obviously, as far as how they build their defense, which is we're going to take size and fundamentally sound, smart players, and we're going to trust that our scheme can get the pass rush taken care of as long as we play coverage, man coverage, really well on the back end. So that's why they paid Byron Jones all that money opposite of Xavier Howard, two high-level cornerbacks. We think we can manufacture a pass rush so we don't have to pay for these really expensive edge pass rushers that other teams have to go pay for. So that's the thought process. Now, what's also true is when you watch their film last year, there were cases in the second half of the season, even when they were winning games, where their pass rush was absolutely non-existent, where it's like, okay, I get that you don't have talent in the pass rush, you don't invest the same way, but you can't have zero there. And there were times that they got caught having zero, and that really hurt them. So they've signed Kyle Van Noy, and he's a better pass rusher than people realize, but he's not going to be mistaken for Von Miller anytime soon. So my answer, Big O, is that I think they need a pass rusher, but I would certainly understand their answer very well may be that's not something we prioritize until the middle rounds, or we'll sign a mid-level veteran. We don't want to do that. But I think a pass rusher would do a lot for them in their third down packages.
Yeah, well, Brown could be a guy from the defensive tackle position at number five that they could use to get their pass rush to help it out. So let me ask you something. Where do you stand with all the Tua talk at five? They need a quarterback at five. pass rusher may not be the number one need at that point right there, because you might be reaching in this draft. So it's quarterback, offensive line, maybe they don't need a corner either, because obviously they just signed Jones and they've got Howard. So you're not going to go corner at five. So where do you stand right now, Andy, in the Tua talk and the health and all of that?
Well, yeah, so in this case, it becomes strictly a function of how do you feel about Tua, because let's say he's the only guy on the board at the time that they pick, which very well could be the case. And I have not studied him, so I would not give my opinion much credence. People I know who and respect within the league who have studied him, I've heard some concerns in that he's, you know, he's undersized. He's really not a great athlete. He's a good athlete by college standards, but he's not going to be anything special athletically in the NFL. And there's the, you know, the hip injury, I think, is a little bit of a concern. But I think Tua is one of those guys who's very much in the eye of the beholder. And that's what's going to make this so interesting to see. And he'll be fine. All it takes is one team to believe in him, and he'll find that early in the draft. But I wouldn't be shocked, and I don't know where Miami stands, I wouldn't be shocked if there are some teams that don't see him as anything close to a first-round or high first-round caliber talent.
Andy, you study the film. You watch all these guys in the league. Besides Van Noy, they added Shaq Lawson, and they added Emmanuel Ogbah. Talk to me a little bit about how much better is that Miami pass rush with those three rotational guys added to this list.
Well, those guys are better than some of the guys they had on the field in their five-man pass rush last year. And it's usually a five-man pass rush, or at least that's how they present this pass rush initially. So some of those guys, there are upgrades. None of those guys are difference makers in and of themselves. You know, Lawson really is not much of an explosive bender at all. He had some decent numbers in Buffalo last year. And I hate to say this because it sounds flimsy, but he had a lot of plays really just fall into his lap. It was unbelievable how many times he happened to be in the right place at the right time. And I'm sure that's part of the reason Buffalo didn't appear to make a whole lot of effort to retain him, as he wasn't quite as dynamic as his stats suggest. Ogba's a little bit interesting. He hasn't been on the field as much the last few years for different reasons, but at his best, I think he can be a quality interior pass rusher. He's not an edge bender either, but what's interesting about how they rush the passer there is a lot of times they don't have guys start out of a three-point stance and get gap penetration necessarily. It's a lot of times guys are standing up. It's about how you approach a blocker so they can set up stunts and twists. So, you know, Ogbah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he's not in on some of the pass rushes, because they tend to go with linebackers and more versatile players for that. But we'll see. And I'm sure they probably don't even quite fully know yet either. They just know they need a more talent up there, and they'll figure out where to play them on third downs once they get closer to the season.
And in their scheme, what did you see from Wilkins as the season went on? Because it seemed like, Andy, he got better as the year went on.
Yeah.
And kind of finished really strong. Your thoughts on Wilkins, their first-round pick last year?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think you can certainly see why he was taken in the first round. He is huge, and he looks athletic. He looks like an athletic big fat guy, which is the best thing you can be as a defensive lineman, especially I see him more as an interior defensive lineman in their scheme. So I would be encouraged if I were Miami about where he is with things. And what you really like is his ability to move laterally down the line of scrimmage. So there were a lot of times last year where the teams ran outside zone or stretch zone plays, which is what most teams are running now. It's what most of the best rushing attacks are comprised of. And there were times that Wilkins could work laterally down the line of scrimmage and tackle backs for a 1 yard gain from behind. That's very difficult to do at his size and the way, and some of the blocks you see with where he lines up. So I was impressed. He can be more consistent, certainly, and that was an issue early in the season at times, but I was impressed with the way he developed over his first season.
Did you like any of the other defensive linemen that you think that they can build on from last year, whether it's Taco? I'm not even going to ask you about Charles Harris, but any of the other guys that they have on this team?
Well, not the way I like Wilkins, obviously.
No.
I liked Godshaw a few years ago. I didn't think he was as effective, or certainly he didn't stand out the same way this past season. One guy I know, there was a point a few weeks ago, I was rewatching some of those Dolphin defensive games, and One guy jumped off the screen. I could not recognize the number. Who is that? And I paused and looked it up, and it was Taco Charlton, which made sense. You know, you saw a burst of the first round talent there. Now, that was an isolated incident, though. That's part of the reason he's in Miami and not Dallas. He's not an every down force at all at this point. But, you know, he's probably the guys we're talking about. He's probably has the most raw talent of anyone coming back from last year's team.
Well, Zach Seiler, too, man. He had a game in week 16 that we're like, who the hell is this guy? And then against the Patriots, they barely played him. So it was one of those Patriot-like things that they did, that they were featuring one guy one week, and then the next week in the game plan, you barely even played. I don't know if you know anything about this guy. They picked him up from Baltimore. Do you know anything about this guy? Because he had a monster week 16. He had just been picked up a couple weeks before, and then they put him on ice. And that's the one of those guys that I'm, like, intrigued with. You know, whenever training camp starts, I want to see if there was anything there.
Yeah, no, I don't have a lot on him either. But what you described is obviously a very Patriot type of approach, and I've seen that with Patriot players over the years. Highly game plan specific,
yeah.
And a lot of it just comes down to matchups and how they feel he'll play against a certain guy.
Linebackers, Vince Beagle, I thought became one hell of a pickup for them last year. Let's go through the linebackers. Beagle, Raekwon McMillan, Jerome Baker. What did you see? What did you like? What you didn't like?
Well, so to me, Beagle and those other two are very different players, because Beagle is up on the line of scrimmage so much. And I understand he's listed as a linebacker on paper, and I get that. But for all intents and purposes, he lines up and plays where most defensive ends do. He just looks different doing it, because they have him stand up instead of get down in the stance. But the other two linebackers, they were better than I thought they'd be in the scheme. Neither one of them has the type of size that you normally associate with a Patriot defense. Or if you look at the Detroit Lions, they just signed Reggie Ragland today. Ragland's a 250-something pound linebacker. That's how they play in Detroit under Matt Patricia. It's these big, thumping defensive front players. That's not what the Dolphins linebackers are. But I thought they played decently within the context of the scheme, given that they're not ideal fits for the scheme. And how a linebacker can perform in coverage, I think, is a big deal in today's NFL. And I'm still getting a feel for how those guys are in coverage. I think Baker's probably the better of the two in coverage. I wouldn't be surprised though if they're keeping an eye on linebackers, and they might even draft one just to it can't be completely comfortable for that staff to know that they don't have the type of linebackers that they usually have, even though those are decent players they have.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Andy Benoit, by the way, joining us here. You can follow him on Twitter at Andy_Benoit. And you were just talking about Detroit. And the reason they made that move is because they got rid of Jared Davis. What happened with Davis, dude? Why did he fail in Detroit? Because he's got a lot of talent. And a lot of people in the NFL liked him as a player, as a leader. What happened with Davis there?
You know, I'll be completely honest with you. That's the first I've heard that they got rid of Davis. When did they do that?
I thought that's what I thought. I just read that he was going to be a free agent. That they're gonna unload him. That's what I thought. I read, if I was correct,
yeah,
or they're going to trade him. That's what it was. That's what I read. That he's that he's on the trade market. That they're shopping him. So that's why I was going to ask you. Why is he falling out of favor in Detroit? Was he not good in Detroit? Because I can't say that I followed everything he does, but I did like him coming out of school.
Yeah, and I have loved him at times. So what we said about Taco Charlton, hey, who's that guy? Jumps off the screen. That's Jared Davis 10 to 12 times a game, which is why I was flummoxed when you said, you know, he might not be there anymore. Now, his issue, at his best snaps are as good as any linebacker's snaps in the NFL. He can be unbelievably explosive. And I thought last season he came along as a blitzer in their scheme very well. That became a big part of what they were doing midway through the season. Where his issues show up, he's never been completely comfortable in coverage from a mental standpoint, okay. I think he thinks the game a little too much there. Now, that was more of an issue early in his career than late, because anymore in Detroit, they play so much man-to-man. You know, that's not very mentally draining necessarily. Hey, you got that guy, go follow him. But the way they play man coverage with their linebackers at times, it's often based on the formation and the way some of those guys release. Who goes here? Who goes there? You got them based on that. So, you know, I don't know if the coaches maybe weren't as comfortable with him as what he can do in coverage. He ought to be on the field every snap because he's their best moving player by far. So the fact that he's not on the field at times in coverage situations suggests there's something there that they don't, that the coaching staff doesn't feel good about with him, probably from the standpoint of picking up assignments.
Yeah, and you know what? Patriots aren't very keen on their linebackers only being two down guys. So I could see where Patricia has got that same kind of thinking. So if Jared's turning into a two-down guy, you're not going to last long there. So that's probably what's happening. All right, let's move back over to the Dolphins. They picked up a guy in Ereck Flowers who played at the University of Miami and, as you know, Andy, was a major bust at tackle. But the Redskins picked him up last year, put him at left guard, and he thrived. So was it real? Was it Memorex? Was it like Lawson that just things went his way? How do you view the Ereck Flowers addition for the Miami Dolphins?
Well, there's no doubt he's better at guard than tackle. I think anybody can see that, and it was evident last season, and he did play well. He wasn't flawless by any stretch, but he didn't stand out negatively either. I thought he had a nice year in Washington. I was surprised that Miami invested what they did in him, but I also understand it from Miami's standpoint because there were times last year they had a very limited offensive line in some of those games, and it really impacted some of their play calling and how they were able to even go about trying to play. And when you get to that level where it's one thing to have weaknesses and you have to work around them, it's another to have weaknesses and you feel like you can't work with them. You got to really work around them. We can't do this. We can't do that. So I understand why they would make a big investment in the O-line because they don't want to have to deal with that again. So we'll see what happens with Flowers. There's more pressure on him now than there was a year ago.
So you're like me. You're. I gave him an A-minus in free agency because I loved all their moves. The only one that I kind of question is the Ereck Flowers one because I just need to see another year of him playing well. I can't believe you after just 1 year because I have a saying that I've said for many, many years on my show, any pro player in any sport can have a good week, a good month, and a good year because sometimes things go their way. Like Derek Anderson 1 year was terrific for the Browns and then they gave him a contract and he could never do it again. So it's just one of those deals that I need to see it again before I believe that he's actually turned the corner. So you're kind of like I am with Ereck Flowers.
Yeah, I would say that's very fair. And keep in mind, and I'm sure the Dolphins feel great about their coaching staff. I'm sure they do. Flowers worked for an exceptionally highly regarded O-line coach last year with Bill Callahan, too.
Yeah, that's right. One of the best. Yeah, you're right. Gesicki, should we believe, should we be excited about the progress that we saw on the field last year?
I was. I thought some of his better moments came in the second half of last season. What he does really well, you know, he reminds me a lot as I think about it. I think he can be a much better version of this guy. But Kobe Fleener for the Colts a few years ago, these high-cut, long-body tight ends that they're probably a little bit clunky when you have to get certain change of direction demands on them, but they're very good down the seams. And I do not mean to suggest that Gesicki's any kind of clunky. He's a good athlete. He's just one of those high cut body guys though. So how do we use him best? Working vertically down the seams is going to be where he separates himself from good to great. And I thought he made some very nice plays down there last year.
That's one guy that, you know, we're kind of excited about. Now, let me ask you, Jesse Davis, this is what we're thinking of. They're going to go, I think, heavy on the offensive line in this draft. They're going to pick at least two or three guys. I could see them actually doing that, you know, with the 14th pick, at least two or three guys throughout that draft. And maybe at number five, there's a lot of tackles that are going to go early in this draft. Maybe they go tackle at number five. Okay, so you do that. You got the Julian Davenport kid that maybe you can teach him to be a swing tackle. Do they keep Jesse Davis at right tackle, or should he be a backup swing guy? How do you view Jesse Davis?
I think in a perfect world, he's your backup swing guy because he's played guard and tackle in his career. And I bet he can do it if you trained him such. I bet he could do it at least three of the four spots, left guard, and right tackle, maybe even left tackle if you need him in a pinch. So that's the ideal way to use Davis. I did go through my film notes a few days ago and look up Jesse Davis to see how he'd done over the course of the year. And his name did not show up a whole lot in my film notes. And for a lineman, offensive lineman, that can be a good thing. You know, you tend to notice when those guys get beat more than you notice when they just soundly do their job. So I think Davis came along. He's certainly better than he was a few years ago. But for most teams, he would be a swing tackle based on the offensive lineman most teams have right now.
Okay. All right. When you were looking at the film, anything I haven't asked you that stood out to you that you liked or something that scared the crap out of you with the Dolphins?
I think Eric Rowe is an important player for them this year moving forward, or somebody in that role, that hybrid coverage safety type of role, kind of the Patrick Chung job that he does in New England. Having stability there is important. And then the last thing that really stood out is I think Nick Needham has a chance to be a really good slot corner in the NFL. And he did not play there a whole lot last year. Mostly played outside. There were times he traveled with the number one receiver for certain parts of the game outside. And I thought he was absolutely exceptional, especially for being such a low pedigree corner. That's a hard position for a guy to be an undrafted or a low round pick and all of a sudden explode and play well, because his position is so athletically demanding that it tends to be the higher drafted guys that do wind up playing well. Needham was fantastic at times, and I think his body type is really suited for playing the slot. And now that Byron Jones is there and Xavier Howard's there, there's going to be opportunities to put him inside if they want.
All right, so let me go off of that. Bobby McCain, I've been thinking about maybe they also go after a safety and they take Bobby McCain and put him back at slot. What do you think about how Bobby played at safety? Should he stay at safety because he really doesn't have the body to play safety? Or would you move him back to the slot? Or was Needham just as good, better, or slightly worse than Bobby McCain at slot? Talk to me about that.
Well, I don't think we've seen enough of Needham in the slot to say where he ranks right now relative to McCain. I think if I were going into camp, though, and I'm developing the roster, Needham's by far the guy I want to try out in the slot first. McCain, though, what he can give you, the Niners have this in Ward at corner / safety. That's why they just re-signed Ward. Is he can be a free safety who drops down and covers the slot at times based on the situation or the offensive look. And the value of that is you don't know if that guy is a corner or a safety necessarily. And it doesn't necessarily matter, you think, except that whether he's a corner or safety usually tells you the quarterback before the snap if it's man or zone coverage. So when you get these undefined guys, and Eric Rowe can kind of be one of those as well, these blurry, vague defensive players that can cover, you can really do a lot with your coverage disguises. And as much as we're talking about Miami and they want to be the Patriots, and they do, stylistically they did a lot with their coverage disguises last year too. They were very creative in some of their cover two zone stuff in the second half of the season. So I think McCain, I would put him at safety with the understanding that we can move him to the slot at times, and it's going to really make a blurry look for that defense or that offense.
I like that. All right, Andy Benoit, by the way, joining us. You can follow him on Twitter at Andy_Benoit. Ted Karras was signed as a center. Are we looking at him like a stopgap guy that will eventually become the center guard swing guy? Or do you think this guy might be ready to be a full-time center from here on out? Because it's only a one-year, $4 million deal, so they weren't willing to commit to him on a long-term basis. How do you look at Ted?
I think I looked at it in the way that I'm Chris Greer, I'm Brian Flores. We said, hey, you know, we had some problems in that interior O-line last year. We want to draft a guy, but we have other things we might want to draft. It's going to be a mid-round pick if we do take one. So we do need an insurance policy for this season because we got to go out and play with somebody decent. That's an important position. So let's get Ted Karras. We know what we're getting. It's nothing special, but we can at least feel okay if he's on the field, and we'll continue our search for a long-term center.
Okay. All right. Good stuff. Anybody else from that free agent class that they just picked up that really stands out to you at all?
Not off the top of my head. You'd have to jog my memory if there's another name we haven't touched on.
No, not really. I mean, Fedjedelem or whatever from the special teamer, the safety, and Camus Grieger-Hill, another special teams guy. Those guys, and we really didn't get into Jordan Howard, which again, I think, you know, for power running and short yardage and those kind of things, I think Miami is going to look for a dynamic back in the draft, a guy that can run and catch, and then Jordan Howard will be that complementary guy, and they'll use him in short yardage situations to not burn out the other guy. That's kind of the way I view Jordan Howard. You view it the same way, right?
Yeah, and I think they need to do it that way because, really, when you look at all of their skill players, they don't have a single guy on the roster except for maybe Albert Wilson. They don't have a guy that can create his own space with the ball in his hands or even create his own space as a route runner. They've got bigger-bodied receivers, you know, Williams, Parker, obviously, Gesicki. Howard's a bigger body. I don't want to call him a plotter. That's a little disrespectful, but he's a more physical runner than he is an agile runner. There's nobody that can create space in that offense right now, and that becomes an issue on third and medium especially. So I think they do need to go get a guy, and it probably makes more sense to find a running back who can catch rather than a slot receiver or something like that. So I'm with you on what they're doing with Howard in the backfield.
All right, Andy, let's wrap it up with this. You just mentioned Albert Wilson. He got better towards the end of the year because he got healthy, but he's been very injury prone. I've been one that says you need to draft a receiver. You got 14 picks. This is a very receiver heavy draft. You're going to have quality receivers into the third round, possibly into the fourth round. You might be able to. I think you're better off drafting a guy since you're getting Preston Williams back along with the way Devontae Parker played. You know, you've got a decent group already. Invest in a young guy. What did you see in Albert Wilson on film? What makes you feel good that they should keep him? Or you feel like me that maybe the injury history, you need to move on from that salary. How do you feel about it?
Well, what makes you feel good about him is that kind of what we're talking about. He's the guy that you would put in. If we need someone to be on the move, if we're going to run a jet sweep or we need a Z receiver who's going to motion across the formation and run crossing routes or even an option route or what have you, that's the guy in the roster they would look to right now. They need another one, and they might need another two if they don't think Wilson can stay healthy. And then the discussion becomes, all right, well, what's the value of that in our offense then? Because it costs a certain amount of capital. Do we need that kind of a shifty receiver before we need a insert other need? Because Williams will likely, if he's healthy, I think he has a chance to really stick in the starting lineup. And obviously Parker's in the starting lineup. They paid him all that money. So you do play with three receivers in today's NFL, so yeah, that factors in as well. It's just a matter of what's the value or how much do we invest here then.
I'm with you there. Andy, what are you working on so folks can check you out there on your Twitter account at Andy_Benoit?
The Twitter account, I have some plays broken down on film, and then there's some stuff up at Sports Illustrated I've been writing about team needs, actually. We're kind of going over this kind of stuff, and I'm watching a lot of film for other projects right now.
There you go. So check them out at Sports Illustrated. Check them out on Twitter. Andy, as always, you are a stud, my brother. Thank you for taking some time during quarantine to talk a little hardcore Dolphins football. You are the man.
I appreciate you. Thanks.
You got it, baby. Be good. There you go. Be safe. Stay corona-free, Andy, which is a beautiful thing. All of us to stay corona-free, which we know some of us are walking around with it, unfortunately. But that was good. That was good. See, that's hardcore Dolphins talk you're not going to get anywhere else. That's the kind of stuff. What am I going to do, right? I gotta come up with some stuff for you guys to enjoy yourselves, to feel better about the Dolphins. I can't wait for the draft. Oh, man. Can't wait for the draft. The only thing is it would have been great if it would have been in Vegas. That's what would have been, absolutely beautiful. Let's do this. Are we going to get Brian Carroll now? Is that what we're going to do? Right? Because we've got a guest at 2. All right. So we'll do our Dolphins Dolphin president now in the next segment. We'll talk to Brian Carroll. We'll have a little fun with him. as Brian is always kind enough to join us from the Las Vegas Dolphin Club. So we'll have a little fun with Brian, and I'm sure he's disappointed about the draft not going to Vegas. But that's all right, Dolphins. We're going to still get Vegas. It'll just be against the Raiders. And so that week we'll all get together in Vegas. We'll all have a blast on Friday and Saturday night. And then Sunday we'll go over to the stadium and we'll watch the Dolphins kick the Raiders' ass. And then we'll celebrate on the Strip after that. So we will get our trip to Vegas this year. It may not be for the draft, but the good thing is we'll get to see our draft picks on the field along with the rest of our team kicking the Raiders' ass. How about that? In a brand new, beautiful Raiders stadium that now we can call home. There you go. So, you know, it's all right. You know, right now it's a little depressing. I get it. We're stuck at home. We're limited. We got a curfew at 10 o'clock. And please don't go out after 10. All right, don't give the cops trouble and don't create trouble for yourself. Okay? Just go out when you have to, if you got to work somewhere or if you got to, you know, get some stuff you need for your family or anything like that, do the important things and then get back to the house. Okay? And remember, tomorrow morning, catch us on Sirius Mad Dog. We'll be doing plenty of hardcore talk there from 8 to 11 in the morning tomorrow on Sirius Mad Dog. So make sure you catch us there. All right, we are at Craig's Inns, Acura, Pembroke Pines. We'll be out here for a little bit more, for at least another hour. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side. We'll continue the talk. We'll talk to Brian Carroll. I got some other things that I want to talk about. I got some music stuff. I got something I got to settle with Bill here because we got some stuff we got to talk about down the line. Back with more right here on the Big O Show.
America's safest and best-selling compact luxury SUV is at Acura of Pembroke Pines, and this is how we do it. RDX, $339 a month at Acura of Pembroke Pines, the number one volume Acura dealer.
No one expects to get into a crash, but I expect you to go to accidentlawfirm.com if you do. Make sure when hiring a driver, you go through a rideshare app so that you can be covered by the insurance, which can be up to $1 million, whether you're a passenger or a driver. In other words, don't try to save a few bucks by paying cash instead of going through the app. I'm attorney Bobby Nunez from Nunez Law in Miami, and we're here to help you through the process. Go to accidentlawfirm.com for a free consultation from me, Bobby Nunez. That's accidentlawfirm.com.
Are you tired of watching the same old travel videos on the internet? Well, then check out MikeNoGoZones.com, a travel documentary that's breaking barriers. I go to the places that the media tells you to fear, where no one else dares to go. Baltimore, Opa-locka, south side of Chicago, and more. Go to MikeNoGoZones.com.
Plus tax, tech title. It includes $899 dealer fee on approved credit. Offers end 11-10-19.
Over 1,500 Toyotas are on the ground, and truckloads of new 2020 Toyotas just keep on coming. To eliminate all 2019 models, Toyota of Hollywood is holding the ultimate 2019 model year changeover event. Make us an offer, any offer, and you can buy a Toyota at up to 50% less than their original MSRP when new and used.
50% less.
A pre-owned 2019 RAV4, not $30,000, $19,775. A pre-owned 2019 Camry LE, not $26,000, $17,775. A pre-owned 2019 Corolla LE, not $22,000, $12,775. Pay up to 50% less at Toyota of Hollywood, the number one volume Toyota dealer. Based on total retail sales of new Toyotas in the Southeast region for 2014 to 2018 per SET. On 441 between Hollywood Boulevard and Sheridan Street. Open till midnight. Night.